or the next chapter says, when we go out there and we interact with them, we get a lot of blowback. And one of the things they'll say is, it's a crutch. And no matter what evidence you present, oh, it's your crutch. So this is the second chapter. As an opener, I wanted to read something from a professor of philosophy and law at New York University. His name is Thomas Nagel. Think about crutches here when you hear this. I want atheism to be true, and I'm made uneasy by the fact that some of the most intelligent and well-informed people I know are religious believers. It isn't just that I don't believe in God and naturally hope that I'm right in my belief. It's that I hope there is no God. I don't want there to be a God. I don't want the universe to be like that. Doesn't that sound a little bit like the Huxley quote that I gave you in the handout there? What was Huxley saying? Can you sort of wrap it up here? It was a longer quote, but I thought it was useful. So here's Aldous Huxley, the guy that wrote Brave New World. By the way, that is a really interesting book as far as when he wrote it and what kind of world has come about as a result of dumping God. It's the Brave New World, right? We're living it. But anyway, what did you get out of that? It was on the question number 2. Do you want me to read it, or did everybody get a copy? I mean, you read it before? Yes, no? Okay, it was on the... It was on the email I sent you about the end of... Yeah, that's it. Well, okay, I'll just read it real quickly. It's not that long, but as I read it, think about what he is saying here. When we're talking about crutches, I had motive for not wanting the world to have a meaning, consequently assumed that it had none and was able without any difficulty to find satisfying reasons for this assumption. The philosopher who finds no meaning in the world is not concerned exclusively with a problem in pure metaphysics. He's also concerned to prove that there's no valid reason why he personally should not do as he wants to do, or why his friends should not seize political power and govern in the way that they find most advantageous to themselves. For myself, the philosophy of meaninglessness was essentially an instrument of liberation, sexual and political. So who's using the crutch here?
He doesn't want any responsibility.
Eric? Well, basically, he's gotten to the logical conclusion, if there is no lawgiver, there is no law. So therefore, I'm not guilty of breaking any law.
Yeah.
So the first thing is to get rid of the lawgiver.
Yeah. And once you do that, then justice comes out of the barrel of a gun. Wasn't that Mao? So look what he says here. There's no valid reason why you can't do what you want and not seize political power and govern in the way that they find most advantageous to themselves. It's always irritated me that Christians are the ones that get the black eye for, quote, or religions, for causing the most trouble and evil in this world. Really. Right? Look at the philosophies that say there is no God and see what they produce, right? You get communism, how's their record? Wow, right? Everything from Pol Pot to these, you know, crackpots that have an idea, even if it's, Juji or something, it's the North Korea's got their own little philosophy of stuff. And I mean, it's just terrible living conditions. So once you turn your back on God, that's what you end up with. So I think Huxley is, at least he's being honest there, huh? So let's talk about this crutch business. Is God just a crutch? One thing I wanted to slow us down on, because I think it will give you more confidence when you get out and start talking to people. He said, intellectual, articulate, and lettered people do something, on page 13. Did you look that up? Because he says that repeatedly on his show. This is a confidence builder. What about the sharpest among us? What do they tend to do? The ones that aren't Christians, but they're very high-powered intellectually.
Make the most elementary mistakes.
They make the most elementary mistakes. Now, not in their field, but when it comes to spiritual matters. So, honest to goodness, Richard Dawkins asked this question one time. He said, if God made the universe, who made God?
Well, haven't we all thought that?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we've thought it, but you... But just consider that question. Is God the kind of thing that gets made? I mean, we just define God as the pre-existent one, right? He's in a different category. He's not a watch, he's not a shoe, he's not a car, he's not a made product in the first place. It's utter nonsense to talk about it that way. But he's this brainy guy, and he's going to ask the question, who made God? That's what little kids ask, right? And you have to tell them, well, God's not the kind of thing that gets made, you know, just by definition. I'm just curious, have you encountered anybody who was a very sharp person, but they had absolutely, you know, way out their ideas about reality, or, you know, they'll say, oh, I wouldn't believe Christianity, and then they get their crystals out. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Peggy?
Yeah, my brother and my sister-in-law are both college professors. They're intelligent, and they're New Agers, and they believe God is in everything. God is this chair. God is that projector. And so for them, you know, for us to talk about faith and God and things like that, they're like, well, but, you know, God is the floor. God is that flower. God, you know, they're very much into environmental things. And they're incredibly intelligent. And as you can imagine, Steve goes around and around and around and around, you know.
Yeah, I'd like to hear those conversations. I bet that'd be interesting.
I mean, it's pretty frustrating in that, you know, it doesn't bother them. They, you know, God
is in everything. Yeah. So, what else have you run into? Anybody run into anything like that where it was just bang, you know, it's like, wow, totally different way of looking at things that don't really seem to make a lot of sense. I'm back to the Heaven's Gate people. They were sharp people, right? Weren't they computer programmers? And these were not the dregs of society. They had degrees, they had gone through college, and they're willing to kill themselves for this. James Jones, how many people were down there with him? 800? 850? 900? I mean, those are not all idiots, right? They're not institutionalized people. They made rational decisions all the time of their life, but it came to religious things, and they just went off the deep end. And we see it again and again. Scientology. I mean, honest to goodness, Tom Cruise is not an idiot, right? He can make movies. He's a sharp guy. You listen to him, and he can express himself.
As long as he's not jumping on the couch.
Yeah, John Travolta, right? These are they have to be sharp to handle this kind of lifestyle that they're in. And they're in Scientology, for heaven's sakes. How'd they get into that? Why does that make sense to them when it really doesn't make any sense at all and has no evidence? Peggy?
I have a neighbor who, she believes that Christian women are very weak, and that is why we have to have God as our crutch. She sees Christian women as very, very weak, weak women. And we have no backbone. We just have to hide behind, well, God will take care of us, or God will, you know, do this. And I mean, she's just adamant that that is why I believe what I do is because I'm a very weak woman that has to have a crutch.
Somebody breezed into my class at school. It was that Bible class, and I was starting to erase the board, and she came in from the next class, and she looked up at that and said, what is that? And I said, I pointed to it because I had the word Bible there or something. I said, we look at the Bible as literature. And she said, no, I don't believe that. And I said, what don't you believe? And she said, yeah, the Bible. I said, what do you mean by that? No, I didn't do the by that, but I said, what do you mean? And she said, oh, I think it was just written by men. And I said, so do I. And she said, what? And I said, the question is whether these people were inspired when they wrote it. I said, that's what you have to think about. And I didn't have time, and, you know, I had to get off, and I wasn't going to sit there and do a huge thing with her at that moment. But I mean, it's kind of interesting, the stuff they say. What do they think? That we believe the Bible just, you know, fell out of heaven? And we said, what is that? You know, I mean, that's the Quran, isn't it? The Quran's the one that came out of heaven. And Joseph Smith, you know, used his little dark...
Mormon.
Yeah, the Mormon stuff, right? That's from heaven. I mean, ours, we can trace it back through translations. By the way, one other thing that I think really sharp people haven't caught on to, they'll say, well, the Bible's been translated so much. So you know what they think? That we took an old manuscript, we copied it, and we threw the manuscript away, and we took that copy, and then 50 years later we said, let's make another copy, and we looked at that, and we threw that one away. And so we keep throwing them away. When they did the King James Bible, I think they had 6 manuscripts that they used from like the Middle Ages to create the King James Bible. We're actually getting closer and closer. Every time there's a new translation, they keep finding more documents. But sharp people don't know that. They're just not aware of it. So they think it's kind of like that, what's that game you play? Gossip or telephone?
Yeah.
They think it's that principle, you know. It's like, well, it's been 2,000 years, so it's obviously been changed all that time. No, they keep going back further to the original document. So, again, it's not that they're stupid. They just don't realize this kind of stuff that, that Christians do know. Yeah. Trace?
In that same exchange with my coworker, he's one of the guys in our IT department. He's quite sharp, and you know, just talking about God versus the universe being in one category, that is a created thing, and God being in another category, that is an uncreated thing. And he just really didn't get the concept. He's saying, well, who made God then? It's like, you're not hearing me. That, you know, God is eternally existent, and so then the universe is eternally existent. Well, no, you're saying that just because the Creator is eternally existent, His creation is eternally existent as well? I'm not following your logic here. And I think it finally dawned on him. And so the last exchange is, okay, what do you mean by eternally existent? And I think for the non-Christian, it's something that we have been exposed to. We get the concept of a God that's outside of time and space, that can see all of eternity as the present. But for someone who hasn't had our background, it's a very difficult concept for them. They can't imagine a God that is outside of everything known, of all of time, all of space.
Yeah, well, it's a hard concept. But any other stories like that where you've come up against somebody that's just really had a hard time with something that we think makes sense, and they're coming to it from a real different perspective? Carlos?
Well, no, I was just thinking maybe that's where the Holy Spirit comes in, and He convinces us. You know, maybe to us it's obvious, but the job of Holy Spirit is to convince us, maybe, that, you know, and we convert.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, we see the evidence, but we're fallen, so we don't accept it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where the Holy Spirit comes in.
Well, that's what Dennis was talking about Sunday. Were you here for the sermon? It was about how it's the gospel is foolishness to those that are perishing. And it is. A lot of them look at it like what we're doing is just absolutely nuts. And then they turn and they do something that, you know, they talk about worshiping the creature rather than the Creator. And it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, whether it's Mormon or whatever. Okay. I thought point number four that I had down here was really the heart of what he's talking about. He said many objections to Christianity that come down and land on you are really objections about what? They're not really objections about the faith itself or about the evidence. What are they usually objecting to? What do you think, Rick?
The perception of God, the way we're presenting it.
Yeah, the way we, it's something wrong with us, right? If you believe in God, therefore you are, and then you can fill in the blank, right? Intolerant? What are some others that get thrown out there?
Judgmental,
narrow-minded, weak, like Peggy was talking about. Christian women must be weak. I mean, it might be. And again, I think about Greg on the radio. He said people accuse him of these different things. He'll say, well, maybe I am. But let's look at the evidence. Right? I mean, why? All of a sudden, we're on trial when I thought it was supposed to be the faith or the whatever it is we're talking about in Christianity. But the words fly, don't they? That's how you end an argument. You call somebody a homophobe, and then you're done. You just walk away. I don't have to deal with you anymore. I just labeled you, and you're somebody I don't have to mess with anymore. It's a cheesy kind of trick that goes on out there. Don't let it happen. Just say, okay, I'll give you that. I'm intolerant. Now what? Right? That doesn't get to the issue that you're supposed to be talking about. Paul or Jesus or the Old Testament or whatever it was you're talking about. They just slapped you with a label. Well, okay, but can we go back to whatever the argument was? What they're doing is that thing he called a genetic fallacy. Did that make sense when he was talking about that? How do you define a genetic fallacy here? I'm not huge on philosophical terms, but just so you know what kind of game is being played there. Eric?
You're basically saying whoever is proposing something, therefore what they're proposing can be false. Attack the person, not their idea.
Yeah, I give you.
Go ahead.
No, that's right.
Well, so basically, you know, if the person is untrustworthy or the person is this, or you cast some aspersion on the person, therefore you're assuming that what they're saying is therefore also, you know, not to be trusted.
Do I dare step into any political things here? Now, don't, let's not go off on a tangent here, but I mean, just think about Newt Gingrich as being attacked for things that he did way back when, right? And does that mean that his message or that his beliefs are wrong? No. I mean, you may still not want him as your candidate. Okay, that's fine. But the point is to go after him instead of his ideas. Do you see what's being done there? It's just the same thing that gets done to Christians. So he's turned around, of course, and now he's saying to Romney, well, you're rich. Or, you know, and you can bring Ron Paul in this, I don't care, Rick Santorum, but they're often kicking each other in the shins rather than going after the actual positions that they've taken to say that's a bad position because it's going to lead to X or Y. It's just easier to go smear the person, isn't it? Wait till the general election this fall, huh? Oh, man, it's going to be dirt flying, right? Just keep an umbrella up in front of the TV set. It's just going to be flying all over the place. I thought C.S. Lewis had a great quotation that was used on page 17. You have to show a person is what? Do you know where I am there? You have to show first that a person is wrong before you ask why he's wrong. Right? Everybody's doing it the other way around. They go after your psychology first. Oh, you need a crutch. Okay, maybe I do. Well, how does that disprove God? It doesn't, does it? You're weak. You're weak-minded. Well, maybe. Have you refuted the idea of God, the idea of Jesus, the resurrection? No. You've been labeled, right? Something's been slapped on your forehead. So if you're going to conduct a fair argument, just you can always use that line. Well, why don't you show me first where I'm wrong before you try to figure out and psychoanalyze me as to why I'm wrong? That changes the parameters, doesn't it? The playing field is now a little bit different there. On page 18, he was saying, honest to goodness, if we were making up a God and we wanted him to be our crutch, would we come up with a Judeo-Christian God? Why wouldn't we come up with this? If this is a man-made invention to make us feel good, which is sort of the non-Christian view, oh, you're just doing it to make yourself feel good. That's your crutch to get you through life. Really? Is the God of the Bible the kind of person that is a soft, cuddly kind of individual that you would create to make yourself feel good, Rick?
The whole idea of the creator of the universe is being able to be killed by man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the violence and terrible things. I mean, look what he did to people that crossed him in the Old Testament, and look at the, Jesus comes up with the Sermon on the Mount, and you look at that and go, sheesh, you know, who can live up to that? Paul tells you all sorts of tough stuff. James has a lot of tough information. Really? You'd create something like that? Isn't it better to have a God that has the Vestal Virgins waiting for you or whatever it is in heaven, like Islam or Scientology? Or you become a God. That's a good thing, right? The Mormons have got that down pat. That's kind of cool. You get to be a God. Don't worry about a God of the universe judging you, right? You can take his spot someday. That's pretty powerful. Now, that's a good creation, right? Ours is not a very good creation. If we were trying to create a God, we did a bad job. Right? This is a being that's so different, so hard for us to figure. You gone through the book of Job lately?
Just read it today.
Did you? Don't you love the ending of that? Like, God shows up on the scene, and finally it's like, okay, he's going to tell everybody why he's doing all the things he's doing. He says, basically, shut up. Politely, but I mean, that's pretty much it. Job just at the end says, I'll just shut my mouth. Now, you're way beyond me. If we're going to create that God, isn't he going to be understandable? Is he going to be a Trinity? Right? That's a head-scratcher. He's three and one. And you can't even come up with a very good illustration of that. People say, well, see, it's kind of like water that's ice, or it's vapor, or it's liquid. But the catch is you can't be all three things at the same time, but God can. Well, there goes that theory, or that illustration, you know. So there's a lot of stuff out there I think is pretty tough. How about number 9 on my notes here? This is from page 19. We all have crutches, don't we? I mean, the Christians are said to, you guys have a crutch, but can a skeptic's crutch hold that individual? The question is not what crutch, the question is what crutch. It's not if we have a crutch. We all have crutches. We all depend on certain things. Okay, so put yourself in the position of the skeptic. Something terrible happens in his or her life. Family member is struck down. Illness comes on. Money is lost. What's their crutch? It was that money, wasn't it? Or it was that person? It was that job? Where do they turn? What are they going to depend on now? Have you been in that kind of a situation? I mean, have you felt like God is a wonderful crutch, not a negative crutch? It's been a great thing to have? Yeah. Illness or loss of jobs or anything big? Man, I'll take that crutch anytime. Don't they say broken people need crutches? I'm okay with that. Is God a crutch? Yeah. Because I need a crutch. And so does everybody. Right, what if you're an Eastern religion kind of person and they tell you this world is just an illusion? That's a terrible crutch. Your wife dies, and what are you going to do about that? It was all an illusion? No, not really. My heart's aching. You know, it's not the kind of crutch you want to go through. Bertrand Russell, the atheist, he says to Christians, he says, "Ha, you got this God thing, and now you got this child. Imagine this child is lying in a bed and is dying. What are you going to say to that kid?" Of course, you can flip it around, can't you? What's the crutch? What's the atheist going to say to this kid? Tough luck. It's the way it goes. You lost. What do you say to those parents? Hope you have another kid. Right? I mean, we've got the hope. We've got the crutch that works, don't we? That child is going to go on. There's going to be another life. We're going to meet that child again. This is temporary, right? There's a big line of life after this life. This is just such a little tiny part of that big line.
I guess the thought there is maybe that, you know, we should be able to call upon God and have him help out that kid, but that's not the kind of God that exists. And so there's a general lack of knowledge about what we're really talking about. It's not a God that we call upon here and now today.
Yeah.
If he reveals himself, great.
Yeah.
And he does, but not necessarily in the miracles that are in the Bible every day to everyone.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes the perception as well. Didn't save that kid.
And it's a very different perspective also. Russell's coming from the perspective of this life is better than anything that could happen afterward. And doesn't realize, when we die, it's kind of like, okay, school's over, it's permanent recess. And then we look forward to the other side of eternity.
That's why I would think, the difference between going to a skeptic's funeral and going to a Christian's funeral. I can't imagine being a pastor and being called into a family that has no belief and you have to go do a funeral. How do you do that? I mean, you just have to... I have no idea. I can't imagine. It'd be just a nightmare, I would think. What hope is there? What do you offer? This is a nice person. He or she is going to leave you some nice memories. That's not going to get you through, I don't think. Scott was talking about a young guy, I guess, that died off of Via Rancho or something. They're doing the funeral here, but Scott said he didn't know what the family's belief was. Gee, I'd like to think that they had a faith, but we don't know. So there's a pastor having to go out to these people and maybe not able to give them that kind of crutch that will get them through these awful times. I'd hate to see that. Well, what's our takeaway from this chapter then? So God is a crutch. Can we get it down to one sentence maybe? What?
Best crutch there is.
Best crutch there is. So what? Yeah, so what? That's shorter yet, two words. So what? What about this, too, that anything, how did I word this? We all have reasons for our beliefs. We just have to see if the reasons are good. Everybody's got reasons. Everybody's got beliefs, right? So we just have to check them out and see if they're good. Well, I hope this was helpful. I hope this was useful for you tonight.